What up,
Hello.
folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 94. Can you believe that this is episode 94?
The 3 years after episode 100.
What? What? We're gonna get 100 this year. If we
We
do
should.
one a month, we'll hit 100 in December. We'll close
Wow,
the
that
year out.
actually, we almost have to do it like that now. No, we
Yeah.
don't. I'm just saying, like,
Yeah, no,
we.
we if we if we have a plan, we won't stick to it. We will fuck it up. So
Touche.
but yeah, this is Get Out the Room, a horror pop culture podcast where we talk about basically anything we feel like talking about. I am your host, Day, and as always, I have my people with me. Scott, say what's good to the people.
What's up,
Man,
everyone?
what you drinking? You sounded really excited.
I don't have anything, but while we're talking, I can make a drink. That sounds like a good idea.
There you go. There you go. Sound like he got some of that good. Some of
Yeah,
that
let's see
hi-hi-hi.
what we got.
And as always, the third voice, but no less, Tone, Greatest American Hero. What's going on, brother?
Nothing, maybe. Nothing.
Wake your ass up. Break yourself, fool. West Coast treating you well, man?
Always, always.
Not always. Don't be lying to these people
Well,
like
no, not
this.
always, but right now,
Don't
right
fuck it up. Don't sit here lying to these people. They done heard us been through. They know how much we've been through. They've been with this life with us. Don't be lying to these people. They deserve better than that. No, but we are Get Out the Room. You can find us on Podomatic, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Listenopoly, the Wicked Radio Network. And if you want to go to some place like iTunes and give us a 5-star review, it will help. We're not really sure
will
how, but it'll
We're
help.
not really sure how, though. That's interesting.
Didn't everybody say that? Give us 5 stars, it helps. Nah, it just puts us in better places. Part of that, and this is something that Tone's gonna be working on, is there's gonna be a Get Out the Room online store, and we're gonna work on some more merch. So for those who never got that first printing of the shirt, Tone, we go create some new shit, and you guys can pick up the designs and rep Get Out the Room in the streets. So, yeah, how about that? How about that?
Well, there we go.
Damn, homie, you sound like me. What you knocking over back there?
No, I just did a newfangled freezers, the low freezer, like below the refrigerator. It's like a drawer.
See, that's what happens when you move into a new house. You don't know shit about your appliances.
That's true.
You can tell he's in the fucking refrigerator with the echo. Nah, that's some good shit.
We got bourbon on a bourbon cube. That's what we're planning on here.
There you go. That's
There
good.
we go.
That's nice. We'll check it out, man. The newest, latest, greatest, and what has been, pretty good run for horror films over the past couple years. This is one we talked about. We've kind of kept our eyes on it. This is the Toni Collette and Gabriel Byrne movie Hereditary. It's done pretty well in the theaters for the second weekend in a row. It's held strong. This is generally where films like this kind of see a big drop off, but there haven't been a lot of Marvel-esque
Well,
blockbusters.
Incredibles 2 opened up this weekend.
Incredibles 2 did open up this weekend, but are as good as everyone expected that to be, it's still not doing Marvel numbers. Marvel is now the gold standard for doing numbers. So,
Touche. This one's budget 10 million. It's already made 30.
right. I mean, that sounds like a A24 type of film in terms of getting your returns.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that somebody's dog in the background, Tom? What is that?
Yeah, my bad.
Okay.
No explanation. Yeah. Fair feed the dog, man. Take the dog out. Let the dog pee. What's happening, bro?
Oh, wow. 824 also did Ex Machina and Room as well.
Yeah. I'm telling you, 824, man, they do really quality stuff. That's a good... It's a good production house. It's similar to how when I see a Focus Features, I'm like, you know what? I'll give that a shot. Focus Features very rarely puts out anything bad. So, you know, who wants to set this one up?
Oh, wow. They did Moonlight, too.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
You see what I mean?
Well, they also did The Lobster, and The Lobster's fucked up.
But The Lobster got a ton of acclaim, man.
Yes, it did. And I mean, I that was one of the ones I had high hopes for, and I remember watching it just going like, oh, wow, this is weird.
This is not what I thought it was going to be.
No. No, it is not. Well, the setup is a family's kind of dealing with a death in the family. And it
death of the mother.
The death of the mother. So the main mom or the mom is played by Toni Collette, and her mother passes, and that kind of starts the movie and kind of leads it on its path. You know, I don't want to say too much, but it's kind of the grief that builds from that for the daughter, and then how that kind of spreads to her son, her daughter, and her husband, and how they kind of react to it. And then dealing with that death in terms of how it leads to the roller coaster ride the movie kind of takes you on from there.
Yeah, man. You know, one of the things that you recognize really early is that not many people in this family are really set to deal with any type of real or meaningful loss. There's you know, we're not going to give you too much, but just recognize that even the dialogue surrounding some of this part isn't what you would say is like heartfelt loss. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't touch you the way that even if you had a complicated relationship with your parent, you would kind of expect to feel differently. Some ways they talk about that, they address it, others they don't. And the film just kind of goes on. But there are aspects of it that are really, you know, pretty on the nose.
Yes, absolutely. And it that helps to give to the kind of the realism, I guess, to the movie. It makes you feel for them a lot more, because as the movie goes on, it really, I mean, there's some things that happen that completely took me by surprise, and I think my jaw dropped a couple different times of just like, wow, they did that and they went there. And
yeah, I mean, out of nowhere, there's some really good filmmaking in terms of, especially for folks who are kind of horror aficionados,
to be able
to plan.
It's hard to.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
It's hard to surprise. I was saying it's hard to surprise me. It's hard to catch me looking, especially in horror, because this is my arena, and they had me going chasing some straight wild goose chases. Like I had no idea what was going on. It was like Scooby Doo and Red Hair, and I was getting faked out left and right.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this hangs on Toni Collette's ability to carry the film.
Oh, she better get some noms. I don't care if it's official or which. I mean, she's
bro, it's a horror flick. They don't do that. She ain't getting shit.
Yep. I was thinking the same thing. It's genre. Ain't nobody giving a fuck about this.
But they should, though, because you're right, Scott. Like, it's a phenomenal job. Like, yeah. I mean, this is a just remarkable piece of acting she turns in.
Yep.
Every time I see that. Yeah, lady, she's always good, man. And this one, no different. You know, she commits. She goes all the way in. And, I really like what she's
all
done there.
All the way in.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no hesitation there. I enjoyed so much of this film. Before we get into slashes really quickly, Scott, was there any is there anything you didn't enjoy about it?
I did. I was just about to interrupt. Then you went down. You kind of set me up here. I was not a big fan. I was not a big fan of the sun.
Wow.
I
was actually going to say the opposite. I really liked that kid. I thought, you know, in the beginning.
I don't think he was. My knee jerk reaction afterwards was, and once you see the whole film, it makes up for it, I guess. I guess my, I didn't like the I didn't like the actor. I didn't like the character. I thought he was kind of a bitch. I don't know.
I understand where you're coming from.
It's hard to explain because, like I said, by the end, it changed a little bit, but only because. When things start making sense, I guess, I know that that's really that itself is kind of confusing because that still doesn't really make a lot of sense. The movie is like it leads you down a certain path and then it kind of leads you down another path and then it leads you down another path. And, you know, my knee jerk reaction to the kid when he was, I don't know, it felt kind of overacting at first. And then it kind of went once you peeled back a few layers, it got a little more, I bought it a little bit more, but I don't know. There was just something about him that was off to me that didn't fit with everything until, I guess, completion. And I'm not a huge fan of, I've never seen the kid in anything else. So I wasn't sold on the son.
You know, I see what you're saying. I used to make this analogy. Actually, I used to make it on the boards about racism. Say, you know, it's like walking into a spider web. Nobody really sees the spider web, but they see your reaction to it. And so you often look stupid and crazy. Because that's real. That's real.
That's some good shit.
Wow. That is good. So,
that is some good shit. Ooh.
So okay. What we're looking at with this kid is, you know, we're watching him walk through this spider web. Like, I can't get too far into it, but we're coming into a very short window in this kid's life. And this window looks kind of humdrum, suburban normal. But his whole life, he's been dealing with a really fucked up situation. And so we're looking at him. Yeah, he's kind of a dick. He's an asshole. He is... like wildly irresponsible and immature. But if we think about his whole life, like it makes his constant needing to escape, his inability to like kind of deal with the reality of a situation. Like I get it.
Inability to be in the moment.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it too. I like the kid. I thought his whole portrayal, especially after you go through it, this shit made a ton of sense to me. And then I also liked the emotional toll the whole shit took. Like, I thought it was good. But
yeah, no, there's no likable characters in this film, not really.
Except that's not for true. One. Gabriel Byrne.
The father's kind of likable.
Yeah,
father's likable.
He's, if you have a lesser actor, the role could be forgettable as fuck.
But yeah, he's very charming. I mean, he's not charming in this role, but correct. He's winsome, I guess I should say. Yeah. You know, he's a good actor.
You know, the further along in this you get, the more you see the subtle changes, the facial expressions.
Well, as the audience, that's what's great about the father's character, though. We're kind of him.
Yep.
And that's what makes his character work. I mean, he's kind of experiencing it like we're experiencing it, and so his facial expressions make, you know, his facial expressions kind of were matching mine. You know, he's just going like, the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, how the fuck did he get here?
Right, and it's just,
yeah, but you gotta goes think, on. Though, like,
that's what I would be doing. That's what someone who doesn't know what's going on would be doing. Like,
yeah.
What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah, but on the flip side, like, when you think about how long he's been doing this and, like, how much he already knows, like, the fact that we're even where we're at is astounding to me. Like, he seems far too reasonable a man to be in this position.
Yep. I agree.
Yep. You figure he's so practical. He's so pragmatic. He's very much level-headed and tender and understanding, you know, that if you take a step back and look at most people in relationships, you will allow the people in your life that you love more rope, even when you know it's not the right thing to do. And that's what I saw of Gabriel Byrne's character.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's the only rational.
And he's been doing it so long that he's let out a lot of leash on that on a lot.
I can see that, the whole frog in the water boiling thing. Like I see that.
Yeah, one of the things to remember is we're not catching this new. That's one thing to keep in mind throughout the whole experience. But
one of the dime turns that the movie does really well is kind of where his character, I think, realizes how deep the family's in. And that's because they lead you down the one path, like we were talking about before we started recording. And then when you find out that that's not really where you're going, that's his... You know, his reaction is, it just feels very natural. It's just like, wow, you know, I've gone through a lot, but holy shit, we're this really getting far. To a point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bottom drops out underneath them real quick, you know.
Yeah, I mean, especially for a person that for the most part we all feel like has a really good idea and grasp on what's happening around him and in his house, and then you recognize that he does not at all.
No, not even a little bit.
He doesn't at all. I like the film. I'd be interested to hear Slashes. Tony, got to go first.
Ooh, man, that's tough. I really enjoyed this flick. Oh man, and that you know, that third act, Joe. Woo.
Yep.
But I gotta say, it was a little plotting in moments. So
it's a 2 hour and 20 minute movie. 2 hour 7 minute movie. There are definitely times where it feels it.
Yeah. I want to give it an 8. Yeah, I'm gonna give it an 8. Give it an 8. 8 out of 10.
Okay. Scott?
I, too, am going to go with an 8 out of 10. I mean, the blasts of the stuff I'm going to take away from the movie are those. There's some scenes that really just, I mean, they stick to you. That's one of those things you're going to remember. I mean, that's what I remember still now. And there's a couple images that are just like burned on my mind, and it's like, I mean, it, and that's memorable in a good way. When you watch a horror movie that has, you know, it's not beating you over the head with some of the really ridiculous, crazy shit. If it's doing that the whole movie, it's not memorable because you become desensitized to it. This one uses those scenes really well, and they're well placed in throughout the film, and it makes good use and adds to the mystique of us watching this family kind of go down the rabbit hole. And I think an 8 is good. It's a movie that I think, you know, I relate this film a lot to another A24 film, The Witch. And I think I liked The Witch better, but The Witch was a little slower. No, it is a lot slower.
It's a lot slower, but it's also a little bit more consistent.
Agreed. And but they're similar.
Yeah, and I agree.
And that's the first thing I thought of when I saw it. And it was kind of weird at first because I remember when we talked about The Witch, it was I liked it, but again, I'm not big on the slow build horror as much as you know you guys are. Yes. And, but I really liked The Witch though, and this movie, that's the first thing that reminded me of. And for as much as I liked The Witch, it was weird to see a film that reminded me of The Witch, and for me to also enjoy it as much as I did. So it's a good recommendation. The buddy of mine that I went with, right when we left, he was like, I want to see that again. And he wrote me the next day. He's like, we should go see that again this weekend. Like, wow. I've never heard him say anything like that. I was like, wow. I want to see it again, but that's not one I'm not going to rush out and see it again right away. But,
well, one of the things I think we have to remember, and this gets lost because we spend so much time watching the good, the bad, the ugly. That's the shit that makes us want to watch horror films.
That's true.
That's the magic. You know what I mean? Like, that's the whole thing. We're doing it for that moment. You know, obviously, we've seen more than, you know, your average person, so it's a little bit more difficult for us to cultivate that moment. But that's what we're doing it for, that particular moment. So, shout out to your friend for catching it.
Yeah, I agree. He loved the film front to back, and that's great. I mean, I'm glad that horror's getting nods to that. And of course, it made me, you know, my first question to him was, have you seen The Witch? And he's just like, no. And I was like, yeah, definitely go out of your way to see that one. That's a good one.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and another strong female led film as well. But there is early buzz around Toni Collette's performance, possibly for Oscar. So I hope that stays that way because I think she did an incredible job.
She's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
I'm telling you, she's game all the time. She is always ready. And yep. She commits. Like as an actor or a young actor, the kids and the people in this film, I can't imagine, you know, just feel like, yo, I have to bring my super A game today or else I'm going to get housed on screen every fucking day.
Yeah.
And, you know, to your point, that could be what, you know, the kid Alex Wolf, is that his name? Let me see.
Alex Wolf. Yeah, it's Alex Wolf.
Alex Wolf. That could be what he was trying to do. Trying not to get blown out of the water every day.
Yeah, I think that now that you bring that, I mean, it felt that way a little bit. I mean, there are scenes where it's him and Collette directly, just the two of them, and it almost feels like he's trying to play catch up. And that's a hard act to follow when she's given 175%, and you know he's trying to keep up with that. And you know, I don't want to complain too much. You know, I really like the film, and like I said, by the end, I felt a lot better about it. But I remember sitting there thinking, like, this motherfucker, a couple different times.
Yeah.
And it took me out of it a little bit. And that kind of made me sad. But
yeah, no, I mean, I get it. Completely get it. I'm about to shock y'all. I'm going 7.5.
Huh.
I'm not shocked. It's a flawed. I won't say it's a flawed film, but
I'd say flawed.
It's there's something just missing. And it's funny because it's so good.
Yeah, it is
not all the way there.
It is masterfully created. It is masterfully shot. The competence that is shown in wide angles and closing in on people or starting tight and coming back to just over somebody's shoulder. Phenomenal camera work. Phenomenal set. Like the gaffers, the people who set the scene, they did an incredible job with this shit. But you know, there's aspects of the way that it plays out. I'm not even gonna tell y'all when it happens. That just completely took me out of the film. And I'll say this too. So my theater, there was a bunch of really young ladies, you know, 21, 22 maybe, and they were appropriately afraid at the appropriate parts, and then at another part, they started dying laughing. You know, they're people with their kids, even at a 10-20 show, they have like their 6-year-old with them. And you know, these girls are hysterically laughing. And at that point, it took me out of the fear aspect, and I started to look at that shit more objectively, and I was like, you know what, this shit is funny.
Yeah, you know, Damon, it's funny you bring that up. The guy sitting next to me in the theater I was, like, consistently laughed throughout the film.
Yep.
It was really bizarre, and it was it kind of took me by surprise, because I agree, it kind of took me out of the fear aspect as well, and made me look at it differently as well. So I completely understand, because, and he wasn't the only one doing it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the, and I don't remember the, like, specifically, but it was, like, consistent of, and some of it, I think, was the uncomfortable laughing when you finally start seeing everything come together, because it's like, holy shit, this is different. this is gone there. But, you know, there are, and this goes back to this, the Alex Wolff's character. You know, there are decisions that he makes that are, I don't know that comical is the word, but they're, like, almost like comically stupid.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you go like, what, wait,
to the
really?
Tone, to the tone litmus test of characters making smart decisions based on real life. I do not always feel as that happened in this film, but.
Correct. Well, there were a few, like the well, for one, probably the dumbest decision in the movie happens pretty early on. And it causes one of the major catalysts.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would you do that? Like, it was the dumbest thing in the world. And I just from what I can say is, Toni Collette's character gets into basically a pissing contest with her son, and makes a decision really that's more based about a power struggle than it has no common sense to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it causes like a colossal fuck up. And from the rest of the movie, you know, it's hard. That was one of the things that took me out of it. It's hard for me to feel as sympathetic as I should for this character when they are literally the cause of their own misery.
Yes.
Yes. And not even for good reason.
Correct.
So that was tough. I will say this, though, to Toni Collette's credit. Like, she pulls it off well. Like, there are times when I am sympathetic for her.
She pulls everything.
There are times
off,
when
dude.
I hate her.
Yes.
There are times when, like she does it all. Like, this was really just a masterclass in acting. And that's not the kind of thing that I would say, but, like, she's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, man. And the younger actress who plays Charlie, but her name is Millie Shapiro.
Yeah.
She is equally good. You know, she's very haunting in her appearance.
She is, dude. I tell you this. I thought she had makeup on, man. Like, I didn't know that she looked like that. I mean,
you ain't shit.
There goes our last female listener.
You ain't never lie. Look,
man.
They coming for motherfuckers. Chris Hardwick just got his show took off before it even aired.
Yeah, but Chris, I mean, you're relating me to Chris fucking Hardwick?
No, I'm just telling you that they come in. Look, they snatching everybody's shows. They snatch
they
your mama show.
I didn't say anything. I'm just making an observation that I thought that the girl was wearing makeup. That's all I said.
And I'm telling you, they taking everybody's show out here. So watch your tongue. Watch your nuggets. Show might get took. Also, yeah. Podomatic just decided that our shit don't go no more.
Good God.
Yeah, Chris Harvick shit gone.
But she's really good. And speaking to that actress, the way they marketed the film, I feel, was really good, too, because it also throws you for a loop, too. Because they, you know, the trailer.
Don't say anymore.
It's very shrewd. And, yes. This is a really... You know, you don't see this often. Like, this is a movie that, you know, actually is surprising. It doesn't give it all away immediately.
Yep.
You don't see that very often.
The trailer doesn't tell you anything. So the less you know about this, the better. Like, everything we've talked about so far.
Why we are speaking around it.
Yeah. The way we're talking about taking around this is the only way for you to enjoy this. So we don't want you to be any different. We don't want you to see it any other way. So 2 8s and a 7.5.
That's still damn good.
But here's the thing. I feel like this is horror essential watch viewing. Like, the same way I feel like The Witch is essential horror viewing, I feel like you got to watch this one too.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there's so many nods in this film, and again, it's really good. It's just really good. Like I would say, it's probably not even probably. It's one of the best horror films this year.
Yeah,
probably one of the best horror films in the last few years.
Yeah,
like it's just really good.
I don't think that's even a question. The wide camera angle shots.
Oh, stop it!
So good, man. There are aspects of the film that turn to clues later on. They're just really, really well done. And again, yes. I feel like the technical aspect of movie making and filmmaking is an A fucking plus. So, hey, I'm with this one. Yeah. So, slashes wise is probably not as Get Out the Room approved, but this is Horror Central. You got to check this one, kids.
Absolutely.
Now, I mean, if you're 7 or above, go check it out.
Look, it's not all of our 7s are always worth catching.
This is true. I say 8 and above. I would cut the line at 8.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, we get in our little moves. I've done it where I just find something dumb fun.
When we did the third Cloverfield, I think I gave the Cloverfield Paradox a 7.
Yeah.
And if you were a fan of the Cloverfield movies, I would say I would recommend it. I mean, like I said, but it's a 7. You're going to go in and you're going to be pissed at parts, and you're going to like other parts. But you know, I mean, I think the thing we liked about the movie was the cast, but
yes,
it's better than it's better than what people would have led you to believe. You know, like another movie in this, you know, it's not horror related, but another movie I saw recently was Ocean's 8, and I like the Ocean's trilogy quite a bit. I find stuff, and even Ocean's 8, I like it, but it's just not as good as the other movies, and that's 7-ish.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But I would recommend it if you like caper movies. I would still recommend it. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe the 7. It's like, yo, if this is your kind of thing, then go see it. But like once a movie gets to be like 8, 9, or 10, I feel like it's ostensibly a good movie. Not ostensibly, excuse me. It's objectively a good movie.
Yeah.
You know, anybody's going to look at that and like it, or at least be able to acknowledge that it's good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree. But, you know, I think we've used the term, you know, Get Out the Room stamp of approval for certain shit that's generally always been 8 and above. Right. I think
that's fair.
I feel like this is a stamp have to see, regardless of whether the score is denoted or not, particularly because of how well it's acted, how well it's crafted,
and
the legitimate scares within the film.
Yeah, no, this is some good stuff. This is a course prerequisite.
Yeah, I think it's prerequisite. I think you got to see it. So, you know. Yeah, anything else before we move on to Tone's next Netflix gem?
Nah.
All right. Well, let's get into these Netflix gems.
Okay, well, folks, I will not be talking around this joint. So if you had any plans on seeing this motherfucker, I suggest you not listen. So in the vein of watching more fucked up shit with Selma Hayek in it, I turned on Everly on my Netflix, and she plays basically a junkie who is abducted by what appears to be some sort of Yakuza crime boss who's also like sadistic and twisted and shit, and he just locks her in her penthouse, and she's his toy, you know. He brings people over to the house to sleep with her. He tortures her. He brands her with this like ridiculous Yakuza tattoo all down, up and down her back.
Damn.
And he stashes her in this basically a building full of other girls just like her.
It is it is roughly just a real dark ass pretty woman.
Yeah. And all that happens before it even starts. Come in. Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
That's not really the theme of the film. Okay.
Well, no. It, you know, take Pretty Woman and then take Game of Death and you throw that in a blender. That's what we talking about. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Told you it was fucked up. So, you know, so we come into her in the bathroom, and she is, there's like 50 dudes outside trying to break in. Because they've come in to you know, do what they want to do with her. Somehow or another, she gets a hold of a weapon. And the rest of the movie is pretty much her killing dudes in the most inventive and crazy ways imaginable. And it's this weird cat and mouse game between her old man and her. Like, she kills all the henchmen he sends. So he calls all the girls in the whole in the building that she's in. And he's like, yo, 40 G's, go take her out. So then she starts killing the other abductees. At some point, someone calls her mother. Her mother comes to the building. Like, it's just, it's like they just continue to ratchet this up. And she just continues to kill people in, like, the most weird, sadistic ways. It's really fucked up. And I have to be honest, I could not help but think of her and Harvey and her stories about how she felt with Harvey. Like, here she is, you know. She's playing a woman who was held hostage and like sidetracked at a young age and kept prisoner by this very powerful man for very sadistic reasons, who often expresses not only like entitlement towards her, but that she should be grateful to him for what he's done to her. Like, I was watching this shit like, fuck, man, I'm sorry. It was really twisted.
Huh. You apologizing for shit that you didn't even see happen.
That's how real it was. Like, she is working out some shit, yo.
It is really, I don't know, man. It's tough when you start to hear certain films like this where you know for a fact that this shit comes from a personal place. Yeah. Like, this is not just a film. Like, the motherfuckers are exercising some emotional wound through art. So.
And sometimes it's beautiful, like with The Gray, you know?
Yeah.
That was beautiful. That was real shit.
Saying goodbye to his wife.
Yeah, this is not beautiful. And it's not, you know, it's a good little popcorn flick. You know, it's not poorly done. It's got Selma in it, so it's not horribly acted or anything. The action scenes are pretty tight. Plot's patently ridiculous, but it's a bubblegum movie. It's just a bubblegum movie with a really shitty flavor.
Damn.
Yeah, but no, I would suggest anybody watch. Like, I would suggest, you know, read up, study up, whatever, about the case that she has against Harvey Weinstein, about her accounts of what she went through with him, and then watch this movie, and it's gonna fuck you up like it fucked me up.
No bueno. No. Yeah, man. Scott, you seen anything recently? Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. What are the slashes for this?
I would give it I would give it a 7. I mean, if this is your kind of thing, you're going to like it.
Wow. That's way more than I thought you were going to give it.
You know, here's the thing. Like, if I were judging this purely on merits, I'd probably give it like a 5.5, a 6, you know? It's cheaply done, but it's competently done. But the everything else behind what this movie is just it made me really think, and I like that, and that's not something I get in a lot of films, so I had to knock it up. I'm not saying it's the greatest thing in the world, but it will make you think if you look at it from the lens I did. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a 7.
That's cool. All right. So Scott, hop in.
Yeah, I saw this was last week sometime. It was late. I was wanting to check something out randomly on Netflix. So I'm looking at all these movies and reading something that caught my eye. It's called The Bad Batch. And I remember seeing trailers for this when it came out. I think it came out a year or two ago. And it's got a Jason Momoa in it, and Jim Carrey, and Keanu Reeves. And what? Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's an interesting cast. And the premise is it's set in the not too distant future, but it's dystopian, and the government now takes prisoners and puts them in like this desert. Instead of like killing them or putting them in prison, they put them in this like barren wasteland, and it's all fenced off and bordered, and they have guards at all these gates and stuff, and people just live in this area, and they've kind of developed their own civilizations, and it's all like criminals, or just not even criminals really, but people that the US deems not worthy to live in the country. And quite frankly, I thought
it's about Australia.
It's how the colony of Australia was formed, the country.
Yes. And it's okay. I was actually describing this to a buddy, and that's the first thing that he said too. He's like, oh, this is just like Australia. I was like, well, if Australia kind of started like this, I mean, things get pretty intense pretty early on in this movie too. And it's all set with the actress that the main character in the movie is played by Suki Waterhouse. And she,
boy, that is a name for your ass.
She comes across a group that, and I'm going to spoil this too, because spoiler alert, I did not care for this movie at all. I can't even believe I watched it all, to be honest with you. I love the premise though. I that's what sucked me into it. And still, even after the movie, I think if they had done a better job, this premise could lead to, you know, franchise potential. Like, I mean, I really like The Purge. I think The Purge has a great idea, and it's led to a really great franchise. Well, not really great, a good franchise. And this movie had that potential just from the sound of it. And yet it's very, very, very slow. And it's art housey, and they try to sell it as a black comedy at times, and I didn't really buy that at all. Jim Carrey plays a mute hermit in the movie. I didn't even know it was him until I had to like pause it and go like, holy shit, that's Jim Carrey. And Keanu Reeves plays a really bizarre part. He kind of plays a part similar to the Immortan Joe from the Mad Max Fury Road. His character kind of is similar to that, a little more lighthearted than Immortan Joe. But Jason Momoa plays a weird character. He's a cannibal. He leads a group of cannibals. The movie really gets off. This girl's just chilling in an abandoned car. She passes out. She gets taken by the hermit to this cannibal group, and she wakes up as they're chopping one of her legs and arms off, and they eat them. And then she makes her escape to another place, and the movie kind of takes off from her revenge on the cannibals, and then them getting revenge on her because she kidnaps one of them. And it's a little jumbled. It didn't do it for me. I like I said, I watched the whole thing front to back. I can't believe that I did. This one's only like, this is like 4-ish slashes.
I'm trying to figure out how the movie didn't end after they chopped off her leg and her arm.
That's kind of what it was shocking, because I've never really seen the main character go through something like this that early on in the movie. And it's just like, holy shit. And well, I mean, like I think the scene was they did it. They chopped her leg off, and they like sawed it off with, you know, like a table saw. And, oh,
good Lord.
And then they go over to this frying pan, and you're like, holy shit, they're just going to eat it right now. And then the frying pan's been sitting on this heater, and they take it and they cauterize her wound right away with this like hot pan that's been sitting on the stove that they're heating it on. And it's like blasts and stuff like that. And see, this is where scenes like this are memorable, but in like not a good way, because the movie's not very good. So I remember this as like, oh God, it just didn't work for me. It was kind of everywhere. It's not that the actors did a bad job. They just did a weird job. they all just played really bizarre parts, and it was trying to be arty just for the sake of being arty, and it I don't think it did very well at all. And I think I remember seeing the poster is like a smiley face shorts on Suki Waterhouse's character, and I remember it when it was out because, you know, the imagery was kind of cool. And like I said, I still like the premise, but I mean, this is a 4 out of 10 at best.
Well, there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. 4 out of 10. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Don't watch this one.
Yeah. Skip this one, kids.
Yeah.
All right. I started on Thoroughbreds and fell asleep on it, honestly. Took a little trip to the DR, so I hadn't really been watching stuff the way that I had before then. So I don't actually have a film on deck right now, surprisingly. Then I'll think about it. I may have one and just forgot about it. But so the next piece, we don't even have to do all of these. We can just kind of pick a couple and talk about them. And then each week or each show, we'll talk about some others. So
I like that.
Let's pick three, and so set this up for us.
I decided I wanted us to do. I was watching The Walking Dead, the previews for The Walking Dead, and thinking back on like why I don't watch that bullshit no more, and what was it about it that made me hate it. And as I was getting in an argument with my goddamn self, I thought, well, shit, we ought to talk about this. So if I can get to argue with myself over this shit.
He's like, I'm mad at myself for this shit. This is somebody I got to talk about this. We got to talk about this.
So I figured we'd talk about some movies, some shows, you know, relatively popular shows or maybe not, that we stopped watching and why we stopped watching.
Yeah.
And when we stopped watching.
Yeah. Which one are you going to take?
I'm gonna go with The Walking Dead since I brought it up.
Okay. All right. So
for me, after a long slog of me just constantly getting my little heart broke by them killing every melanated character with even an ounce of swag, they finally killed Glenn. And I had to tap out. That was it for me. I just couldn't do it no more.
Now, you're not a comic reader, though, correct?
No, not the comics. And I understand that Glenn made it way longer than he did in the comics. And, I mean, I get that. Yeah. I get that.
No. I was just going to say, his death works pretty well in the comics as well.
It's an iconic moment for the comic book.
It's an iconic moment for Negan in the comic book and for Glenn, really. And it just works way better in the comic. But I understand where you're coming from on the show.
Yeah, I mean, within the show, it's almost unnecessary. But, you know, to where we are now, you know, it's supposed to be the motivator and the big deal. Because realistically, since then, it hasn't even been 9 months.
You mean within the context of the show?
Correct.
Yeah, that's true. But that's
are we like that two right or three there, seasons away from that? Jesus.
That, yeah.
That's right there is why I'm a Walking Dead fan is saying, you know, fuck this show now. That right there is the problem. We're now three seasons in and they've been beating this fucking savior shit to death. And it happened in the comic too. Like I'll admit the Glenn death was a really great issue and a great moment because it introduced a great character and a great set of characters. And then they just stuck on him for fucking ever. And it didn't make any sense to me. And that's what took me out of it. Sorry to interrupt there, Tone.
That's the whole point of this.
It's just...
Yeah, we're all commenting on that shit. Yeah.
It's just... It's very, very frustrating because even my dad was a big Walking Dead fan. Well, it was, but he's the same way. His question, he would always say, he'd go like, did you watch Walking Dead the other day? And I'd go like, yeah. And he goes, why are they still dealing with the saviors like this. Why don't they just go kill them? And I'm like, yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of fans. And as you saw that, I mean, fans are starting to backlash. And even now the actors are starting to realize, what the fuck did we get into? And it's, I think they're realizing that the show keeps, you can't just keep going back to the zombies, but by the same token, at this point, you better go back to the zombies because you keep going back to all these people. And you have to have a good balance. And they've been fucking that balance up really badly. Like I said, the comic book savior story is not very good. And they set it up to be good, and it does not deliver. The next set of villains, which I don't know that they're going to do on the show, quite frankly, is fantastic. And I the way they're setting up the show, I think they're going to take a new, different direction. And I think that's a big mistake.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, this show has had writing issues from the beginning. We always cut it passes, and it looked like they'd write the ship, and we got excited, and then they'd steer right back into the ditch. Like, this is a pattern with them. Yep. I don't think they know what they're doing, frankly. I don't think Kirkman... Well, it's clear Kirkman, I mean, and that's another whole part of the story. Like, Kirkman has fucked this production 6 ways from Sunday and has been
he got a big head from the beginning. When the TV show took off, Kirkman got a big head about the show, and he's slowly taken more control over it. And, you know.
Oh, yeah. We had the best season. What was it? Glenn and Mazzotta? I forget the names of the showrunner and the writer, but they gave us the best season of Walking Dead I've ever had. And this fool still tried to get them fired and succeeded in doing so.
Well, remember, I mean, early on, Frank Darabont was the one that brought it to series. And I mean, Frank Darabont, let's keep in mind, this is the guy behind Shawshank Redemption. This is a guy behind.
He's a serious director.
Yeah, absolutely is. And he brought Walking Dead to the screen, and he directed the pilot. The pilot's still to this day.
The pilot was outstanding. Yeah. That's how they got us. You know, they got us with that pilot.
If I remember correctly, he was going to lead the second season. The episode was going to be from the point of view of a group of soldiers. And by the end of the episode, they were going to come up on the tank that Rick is in during the first season when he meets Glenn. In that, like, remember that scene where he's in that
tank? Yeah, I remember that.
And that the soldiers, one of the soldiers in the tank that he sees the dead body of, that was going to be Frank Darabont's season 2 opener about how that soldier got in that tank. And it was going to end with him dying in the tank. And it was going to be a Frank Darabont season premiere. And that got derailed when we should have known right away, he was the first domino to fall of showrunners that have fallen like flies.
Right.
And that's really unfortunate.
Now, if I recall correctly, Damon, you had a different point where you stopped watching The Walking Dead.
I stopped watching recently because it's not doing anything. And it's boring.
It is.
And the fact that Maggie hasn't had the baby that she and Glenn had, that they conceived together. The baby hasn't come yet. Get the fuck out of here. It's too much. It's too much.
Well, but I guess that's with the timeline.
It's a continuity issue. But it's three seasons, though. It's been like, what, 2-3 seasons, right?
Yeah.
So she's been pregnant for 2 full seasons, correct?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
That's a long time to stretch out a pregnancy arc.
With the combined, I mean, we did just make the timeline that says it's really only been a short amount of time over the 3 seasons, which in and of itself is a problem. But
yeah, I'm saying that's like, I'm sure they make it work continuity wise, but she's not even problem.
Visibly pregnant on the show. She's not visibly pregnant.
Yeah, there's no baby bump.
No.
Oh, well, this is fucking retarded then.
Everyone just talks about her being pregnant.
Well, and they kind of beat around the bush now because of her standing with the Hilltop in that, I mean, she's essentially the Rick of the Hilltop, which, again, is how they go in the comics, which I'm fine with. But, you know, in the comics, she's not pregnant. I think they actually adopt, I think they adopt one of Carol's kids, if I'm not mistaken, in the comic, something like that. And it's just, you know, it plays a little differently, and that, you know, that's neither here nor there. What I'm getting at is, I understand what you're saying, and that's, yes, if you start digging in, then we're really going to tear this thing apart. I mean, I'm the fan who's defended it most of all, and I'm sitting here going like, man, I mean, this thing is really derailed badly. And
you and I have had conversations where you're like, yeah, I can't defend this anymore. That's when I recognize, like, okay, we may be at a point that we may not be able to come back from.
Yeah, I mean, and now the way I understand it is, I gave up on Fear of the Walking Dead after season one of that. I don't even remember what the
fuck happened. I heard Fear is better and more consistent than Walking Dead.
I've heard that. That's what I was going to, is Fear. I've heard Fear this past season when they apparently they made a huge time jump, and that's when Morgan came on board as well.
Yeah,
and apparently Fear is fantastic now.
And the season maybe
not fantastic might be pushing it, but in comparison to The Walking Dead, Fear is supposed to be better at this point.
Yeah. Well, they're not constrained or restrained or whatever you want to call it by an overarching story that people already know.
Correct. So right.
If they figure out that something's not working, they don't have to build to the farm. They don't then have to, you know, they don't have to build to a Negan.
Well, there is one thing that, you know, a lot of people are, you know, the big news, of course, is Andrew Lincoln is going to be gone after this season, which, of course, is like, how do you continue the main story without the main character?
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's, that, you know, on one hand, I think that sounds really, really, really stupid. But on the other, if you're going to go different, you know, now they want Daryl to be a major character. And I'm not sure he's a major character anyway. Like, I mean, the I'm character sure works either. Better. He's better the behind the scenes badass. I mean, he's the that's his job. That's his.
Yeah.
If you know too much about Daryl and you focus too much on him, he loses some of his allure, and it doesn't make him as cool. Now he's leading the group. Well, that's not really Daryl, and quite frankly, I don't know that that's really Norman Reedus even.
Correct. I mean, Daryl's always been a Monet. Don't look too close.
Correct. And. But, you know, part of me also thinks, I mean, if you're going to go for a TV show and you're going to go in a brand new direction, I mean, why not go with the character that has nothing to do with comic books?
Yeah.
Not constrained by this. You're not constrained by the story. You can kind of tell your own tale.
Yep.
So in a way, I'm like, well, I mean, you know, look, I'm going to watch it. I, you know, I'm a fan. I'm a big enough fan of the comics, and the comics are still pretty entertaining. For the most part, I think the new story is currently. Are you caught up with the comics now, Damon?
No, I'm not. I don't know much. You know, the Whispers and Alpha and Beta. I think that.
They're now to the next group after that already.
Okay.
So they're on the Commonwealth is the new group they've come across. Which I think was that woman that they just introduced recently, or in the last season of this past season of the show.
The Junkers.
I think that woman is from this Commonwealth place, which means I really hope that doesn't mean they're skipping the Whispers, because that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, I think so too. I find that. So here's the worst thing you can say about a piece of media: it's just boring. It's uninteresting.
Yeah. And it's a show about zombies. It's a show about zombies.
We don't even see the zombies anymore. Zombies are not the danger. People are the danger. In a world where zombies have, like, thinned out all the people, the biggest danger to this world is still people.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever.
I get the change at first, but they got to go back to the zombies, and you have to. And conveniently, that's what the Whisperers do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what they are. You know, I'd like to see more of it. I don't know if it's going to happen. Tone, hearing anything that we said, does this shit make you want to watch more? Guess not.
Nope.
Guess not.
Wah, wah. You need to add that sound effect.
Either that or the Price is Right.
Or no, no, put on the Curb Your Enthusiasm music.
Yeah, that curb. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Pretty, pretty good.
There it is. There it is too.
So what's your next show, Scott?
You know, I remember that, and so I'm throwing it back to early Get Out the Room days here. I remember when you guys, when you, Tone, and Ryan were talking about a lot of TV early on, and you guys would be complaining about these shows. I would always be sitting there thinking, like, man, if you guys are bitching about these shows, the fuck are you guys watching them for? And I try not to watch a show that doesn't really interest me, and if it doesn't, I simply just stop watching it. And I can't think off the top of my head about a show, even a horror show, that has made me feel that way. I mean, if I'm stretching it into superhero stuff, I go back to the Netflix Marvel stuff. You know, I mean, we've talked Iron Fist, and Iron Fist was disappointing. We've talked Defenders, which was unfortunately disappointing. So much so, I don't even think they're going to make a Defenders season 2.
They're not.
Which is kind of shocking to me. Even I get it, but on the other hand, I'm like, I mean, you guys can probably try again and make it better. I hope you can make it better, but it's neither here nor there. I'm the guy. I stuck with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. past its really, I mean, looking back, the first season at this point was really bad compared to where they went with it, and the past couple seasons have been really, really fantastic on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And, you know, I stuck with it, and I was interested. I liked the characters, and it became pretty interesting to me to follow that. So offhand, I can't think of one that's kind of died off. What about you?
So this is not necessarily one I stopped watching, but more one that we stopped talking about.
Okay.
And that's Grimm.
Yeah.
Grimm.
That's one of the shows that you guys would be talking about. And I go, like, man, you guys are like, stop watching it.
The thing about Grimm is like the setup was always so interesting. And there was always this idea that this shit, would just, it would get there, like, you know, some way, somehow. The cast was always so good, the setups were always so good. He's like, this shit is going to get there, it's going to happen, and it never did. It just fucking never did. It ended crazily. Juliet, she became a Hex and Beast, and Adeline and Nick had a baby, and Adeline is his main boo by the end because they have a son. Juliet is just, this person. It's so weird. So weird. The whole thing is strange. And, Silas Weir Mitchell is still the best actor on the show. His relationship was still the highlight of every episode. And it's just one of those things where the show had such an interesting premise, and there was always some halfway decent special effects that you say, you know what, next week they're going to get it right. No, fuck that. Next week they're going to get it right.
This sounds like your Walking Dead.
It like, really that, was. Like,
it was. That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
It's my fucking albatross.
Yep.
It's my goddamn albatross, man. And I followed it all the way to the end. My wife and I kind of plowed through the back nine to finish the show out. We were just like, Jesus, is the show over? You watch it because you have to finish it, not because you're genuinely interested in seeing it.
That made me think of one. It made me think of another one. It's not horror, but my wife and I did, we did the same thing with Sons of Anarchy. I really liked Sons of Anarchy early on. And, you talk to a lot of people, man, they love, like, Sons of Anarchy has a huge fan base. And I thought the first, let's see, I think it was on like 7 or 8 seasons, something like that. The first 3 or 4 seasons are really good. And then it becomes frustratingly bad. And
Jax.
Yeah, God. Like, look, I want to like Charlie Hunnam. I really, really do. But he's in that line of guys that Hollywood tried to push because he's this young, good looking guy, and they're trying to push him as a star, and he's just not a great actor. And
Kitsch Dog. Sound like we got yes. another Kitsch Dog on our hands.
Well, Kitsch or Jai Courtney. Yeah. Or Sam Worthington.
Sam Worthington. This is absolutely the Sam Worthington award.
It's just like, man, and Sam Worthington, I don't feel as much like the others. I like Terminator Salvation to me is watchable. It's not good, but it's watchable. Avatar hasn't aged very well because the story is just not. I mean, it's very simple.
Yeah.
And he's okay in those movies. It's not, but that's the problem. He's okay. He's the leading man, and he's only okay. There's the issue. And Charlie Hunnam, he always has that tough guy walk and the tough guy like forced swag, and that's what he was on Sons of Anarchy. And it's okay at first, but then it just continues and it continues. And some of the decisions that him and this motorcycle gang were making was just really bad, and it didn't make any sense, and yet we couldn't stop watching because we needed to see how the story was going to end, because we're like, well, I mean, they're going to have to kill this dude, and then they waited a whole year and you go like, well, he's going to die this year, and oh, he survived again, and he's like, well, I don't understand why he hasn't died yet, and eventually they do, but it's like 3 years too late. And that type of show, I mean, it's not a great example since I'm saying I watched it all, but I mean, that would be one I would not recommend to someone. Like, would you recommend Grimm?
Ooh, I feel like Grimm is to the earlier point of if that's your lane, it can be enjoyable. But you know, it's going to be hard. You're going to have to put in a lot of work to love it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, yeah,
well, it's like, know. You know, like Lost is a show we've brought up here and there. And Lost is an interesting show because by the end, it doesn't work. But I would recommend it because the early seasons are fantastic. And
yeah, the fervor behind trying to figure stuff out early on in the show is such a unique experience that I would never tell someone not to indulge.
Agreed. Absolutely agree. And even thinking back, like you go, well, you know, the first season was fantastic. Well, actually, you know, man, the first 2 seasons, actually the third season was pretty cool. And the fourth season. And then as you go on, you finally hit season 6, and that's really where the show derailed completely.
Completely.
And it was just kind of like, wait a minute. I bought season one was fantastic. Season 2 was really good. Season 3 was really good. Season 4 and 5 had good to great parts in it. And then season 6 happens and you're kind of like, now, wait a minute. I devoted a lot of time to this show. And you mean to tell me that this is where you're going with it? Like, this is what you decide to do with the smoke monster. This is what you decide to do with the mysterious man in the cabin. And this is what you decide to do with the others. And it just doesn't, it doesn't work because, I mean, remember they introduced the tail section of characters, and like, I think Mr. Echo was in that, and Michelle Rodriguez had a character that was in there, and all those characters eventually fucking died. Like,
yeah,
what?
And half of them got written off because of doing dumb shit in real life, not even because the show didn't need them.
Right. Oh, okay. I didn't know all that. Is that true?
Yeah, really? Rodriguez got kicked off because she got 2 Deweys in Hawaii during filming.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and she. Now that you say it, it wasn't her death scene. It was kind of a shocking, like, in the middle of the episode, death too.
It was towards the end of a season, and, you know. But she was definitely supposed to play a larger part, but she was fucking up, and she fucked up so much. They're like, "Yeah, you got to go." So,
but I mean, there are some man. I mean, there are some really great, like the episodes with what's his name, the guy that did the time traveling,
Desmond.
That was. Desmond, yes.
Yeah,
I mean, his episode really cool.
Yeah, Desmond and Kenny are worth the price of admission.
Yes, they are. And I mean, you know, we're talking about these shows that, I mean, we watched them to the end because, you know, we want to know what happens, and you're so interested in the characters and story that you really want to see how the story that you devoted so much time ends, regardless of how pissed off it makes you.
Yeah, man. At some point you say to yourself that you've invested enough time that you're going to see it through. Sometimes yes. Shit ain't worth it.
No, it's not. It's not. It's really not. And I tell you what, I'm going to give Walking Dead a chance for this next upcoming season. But man, I mean, if it doesn't pull its weight, I mean, that might be one that's like, man, I don't know if this is worth investing. I mean, this year was the first year where I didn't take time out of my day to watch it on Sunday. I would watch it on like a Wednesday or when I got around to it. I'd be just like, oh, I got an episode of Walking Dead on the DVR. Great. I guess I'll watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I look at this whole thing and I think if by the time Andrew Lincoln leaves and this shit don't have something fresh to talk about, gotta go, man.
I mean, I agree. I mean, if you're going to write off and you're writing off what really accounts to be, I mean, he's the book's, well, he's not the book's coolest character, but he's the book's, I mean, he's the book's main guy. I mean, and they just killed Carl. You're going to write Rick off, and there's rumors that Cohen is going to leave too.
Well, that's because they're talking about not paying her.
Well, that, and she had another show that went to, that got ordered to series.
Oh man. Yeah. The Walking Dead also, they shoot forever.
Yes.
And it really hinders your ability to do anything else. So it's just like Downton Abbey, like all the people who's like made it big from that particular show, all of them were dying to get out of their contracts and dying to get death scenes so they could try and do other stuff.
Huh. Okay.
You know, obviously the most successful one at this point who broke out is the dude from Legion.
Yep.
Michelle Dockery, Lady Mary, she has a show on TNT, I believe. It's done pretty well. But you know, for the most part, you know, most people just didn't make that breakout because the film schedule was difficult, so it was hard to get some new shit going, make some new money.
Right. I always, you know, it's funny. It always bothers me when you watch a show and they write a character off, even in a good episode where the character dies or is written off the show, and you find out that, oh, it's because they took another job. Whereas I just want it to be a part of the story. Like, why can't it just be a story point? You know what I mean? I mean, I get it, but at the same time, I'm like, I mean, it could be the story is that character has to die. I mean, sometimes that happens. And it always feels like the news comes like, oh, so-and-so's playing this in this movie role or has a starring role in this show. Yep. I'm like, oh, well, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, man. Not good.
Yep.
Yeah. But I'm sure there are a ton of, I guess what we would consider, you know, genre shows that just didn't hold our attention. You know, a show like iZombie on the CW, which I thought was really good. But
great choice.
You know, but for one reason or another, you just stop watching it after a while. You know, you don't have enough in you to keep going with that show. And the show is really interesting. It's really entertaining. It's really fun. They do a lot on a very limited budget, but you know, you can't watch everything. And that's one of the ones that found its way to the wayside.
Yep.
Tone, welcome back. Anything else you want to say before we, get about a show?
No, I think that was a good segment. And it's funny. I had the exact same feelings about iZombie.
Yeah.
Not bad. You know, I just stopped watching because I just was like, why?
Yeah. Like every once in a while, I'll throw it on in the background because they're almost all on Netflix now.
Indeed.
So, you know, you can just catch up on it. but they're like four seasons in. Who knew iZombie was going to get a four seasons?
Huh. Yeah. I never watched it, but that's shocking to even hear.
Yeah. No.
Yep. So. Yeah, you figure at some point you're just not going to be able to do everything. So.
No, it's too much good TV out here to be making compromises, man. It really is.
That shit is true. That shit is true. So, realistically, we're probably done with all of The Walking Dead. We'll probably check in on it.
I could do check-ins. I'll be the check-in segment, schmuck.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're gonna have to because I don't know if I have it in me anymore.
Yeah, I checked out a while ago. I'm not with it. I mean, has their dealing with characters of color gotten any better at all?
Well, everyone else is dead.
They still favor Michonne, but she's the main. I mean, she's one of the main characters. So, yeah. But other than that, no.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I mean, there's nobody left.
That's true. Well, I mean, I guess Ezekiel still. I mean, they don't really do a lot with him, but he's still on the show too.
Morgan had to leave the damn show, dog.
Yeah, and then there we go. I didn't even think of Morgan. Morgan's a fantastic. I mean, not only is his character good, the actor's fantastic too. And then he fucking left.
Yeah, Lenny James gone.
Yep.
Oh, so. I can't. Seriously, man, this is. I you know, it's funny. I would love to pick their brains just to figure out like what is up with that. Because it was a very clear pattern of them killing off characters of color whenever they got to be a little too whatever.
Too uppity.
Too strong, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just consistently.
Like, and y'all got a little familiar, you got to go.
Yeah, I would really love to know, like, what the fuck was going on.
Tone, I'll tell you this. If they stick to the comics, the next story with the whispers we were talking about earlier, there's a frustrating death there, too.
Oh man, there is. Yeah, it would be really soon too.
But I mean, it now in the comic, it again. This is another one that works in the comic actually really well. But it would, if with what you're saying, Tone, because you're not there's articles written about this about characters of color in Walking Dead being red shirts essentially.
Yeah.
And that scene that I'm talking about with the whispers would piss people the fuck off.
It would be an unnecessary thing to do.
Correct. Because you could do it. You could pick other people, I think, instead.
Yeah.
And make it work. So, but, you know, like I said, in the comic, it does work because that actually creates it creates a new path for another character that, you know, kind of sets that up. So.
Yeah, you figure that out. Like, before we get off of this, I do want to bring this shit up, man. I've been having a really difficult time with the news of Chris Hardwick and how he's basically about to get his whole shit canceled. Like, the Nerdist, a website took him off as founder.
Yep, I saw that.
You know,
they canceled all of his Comic-Con stuff.
Yeah, like he's no longer moderating. He's no longer invited. His show, which was supposed to air season two, Talking with Chris Hardwick, just vanished. And in its place, they had Ride with Norman Reedus. And it was supposed to be a huge deal because it had Donald Glover. I was actually kind of looking forward to that shit. Nope, never going to see the light of day.
Wait, hold on. Wait, what show were you just talking about?
Talking. He had his own show separate from The Walking Dead, The Talking Dead,
Oh, yeah, okay. And wait, he was going to have guys like Donald Glover on there too.
Donald Glover was the first host in the second season.
Wow.
He was all, like, it was, if you pull it up on Comcast, That's
what by the way, dude, just to break into this, and we're, you know, Donald Glover is so likable, it like hurts. A dude's got more talent in his pinky finger than people do in their entire life.
Yeah, dude's really talented.
He really is.
But you know,
so Damon, why don't you? I mean, I know me. I don't know what's going on with Chris Hardwick. I mean, I have an idea, but why don't you hit the people what's going on?
So, his ex-girlfriend penned a really small. I won't even say small. She penned an open letter. She never named names, but it was basically a letter describing her relationships and the emotional and sometimes physical abuse that she went through over the course of 3 years dating somebody who was a moderately successful podcaster who turned into the CEO of a nerd powerhouse company. And the life that she outlined was just at times heartbreaking, man.
Yeah.
It was really difficult to read where, you know, there were rules, and she kind of wrote down all the rules that she, as his girlfriend, had to abide by in order to keep him happy, you know, making herself available to him every day as soon as he got home. Not having any male friends. Like, the making yourself available is exactly what you think it is. You know, she had to be ready for sex when he came home. And if not, you know, you should just be ready. You know what I mean?
Jesus.
And, you know, when she wasn't, she would just lay there. He was like, oh, you're starfishing tonight. Ha 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 ha. You know, she was like, look. She never used the R word. She was like, look, because I was so scared to disappoint him or throw him off or, you know, make him angry.
Right.
I just went along with it, even on nights when I really didn't want to. And just the emotional abuse, the sense of worthlessness, the recounting of stories of going to Comic-Con and him locking her in the hotel room the entire weekend while he went to Comic-Con, did the panels, went to all the parties, and she just stayed in the room. You know, stuff Jesus. Like that. So it's like really disgusting behavior that we all kind of assume people are better about.
Any comment from him? Like, has he confirmed, denied?
I just looked it up, and his one comment, let me go back to this. He made a statement that says, our 3-year relationship was not perfect. We were ultimately not a good match and argued, even shouted at each other. But I loved her and did my best to uplift and support her as a partner and companion in any way. And at no time did I sexually assault her.
Yeah. That's
literally okay, that's the most milquetoast denial. Like,
it's not even
that doesn't even touch on the emotional abuse or anything else. Like,
yeah, it's basically just saying, okay, so I didn't rape her. That tells me
what she's saying is true.
Correct. He's basically saying I didn't rape her, but yes, all that other shit happened. And, yeah, wow. So
it's so funny when you catch a glimpse behind the curtain. Like, he does not seem like that dude at all.
And she talks about that in the open letter. And, you know, just kind of like, hey, look, you know, when cameras were on and people were around, he was charming, he was fun, he was loving. But the second the cameras were off and people were gone, he was just terrible. And,
Jesus,
you know, he tore down my self-esteem. He made me feel, you know, horrible about myself. And, you know, I think the emotional abuse was really real. I think she just got to the point where she needed to leave. And it wasn't always easy for her to leave. So
in the wake of that, they're just taking all his shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to fade into obscurity because of this. I mean, he's going to have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see him going anywhere after this. He's going to have to become a content producer or something like that. If that was the case, he's going to start writing or directing or producing stuff, because I don't see him in front of a camera ever again.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I mean, particularly, there was other stuff like, you know, he ruined her career. Like, hey, if you leave me, she said she used to work with 5 different studios and 5 different companies, and as soon as they broke up, they blackballed her. Nobody would hire her. She couldn't do any work.
Are you kidding me?
You know, she's...
That is disgusting. You know, the mess... It's what. Look, I mean, we've all had relationships, and relationships get ugly and nasty sometimes, and that's not an excuse. Like, if what she is accusing of him is true, then, you know, he has been a horrendous person to her. But then to have that very personal, like, failing, and then make that professional, make it so that somebody can't eat.
Yep.
Like, that's just disgusting. Like that. Oh
yeah. So there's stuff like that. Like, she was in the hospital and, you know, she said, remarkably, he slept at the foot of her bed, and there was, like, really tender, kind of touching and supportive moments. And as she's recovering from, I think she, this might have been when she had a smush motion, and, you know, she's in the hospital, her mother's there, and basically, as soon as she wakes up from whatever's happening, surgery, whatever ailment, you know, he asked the doctor, so when can we have her having sex again? When's she up and running?
Oh, God.
In front of her mother. You know, that kind of
shit. Oh, my Lord.
So, yeah, man, it's...
See, you know a lot more than I did. I heard the story, and I didn't want to look in anymore. I was just like, nah, check.
I read it. I sat down and I read it before it broke. You know, somebody was like, hey, you know, Twitter has this really strange thing about, you know, finding the truth out. And they basically connected the dots really quickly. And I read it and I was just like, you know, this whole idea that there's going to be more inclusion, there's going to be more representation now that the nerds are king, right?
And yeah.
Realistically, the nerds are now becoming the gatekeeping jocks who they attested to hate. They've just reversed roles now. Instead of, you know, bringing people together and everybody getting the love that now, you know, we're going to open the door for everyone's ideas. You know, these guys are just...
They're playing King of the Hill.
Yeah. They're playing King of the Hill, and it's more the same. It's more the same, and it's unfortunate. You know, you figure people who are treated poorly, or, you know, for whatever reason, you know, just didn't get a fair shake during younger parts of their lives, now that they do have the opportunity to be an influencer and help other folks, they've just decided, fuck that, we're going to keep living this good comic book life, and, you know, fuck what you heard. You know, the fact that, like, nerd shit is popular is crazy. But strangely enough, you know, shouldn't everybody eat off that? Like, it wasn't just, you know, white guys who were involved in this shit. Everybody was involved. Everybody was up on that shit. So,
yeah, well, I mean, it's a classic power corrupts tale. You know what I mean? Correct. Like, you think it's going to be different, and it's not.
Yeah.
Meet new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah. You know, so for whatever happened between them, and she said she has proof, if anybody, you know, is going to question her, try and get her to come to the court, or just press her in any way. She's saying that she has recordings, she has writings, like, she has all that shit in there. So,
shit.
You know, I hope this is not one of those things that actually gets out. Like, at this point, it's enough. You know, Harwick's kind of, he's out of the box for a little while. He's out of the paint.
Right, and I'm not sure what's served by dredging all that up at this point. Like,
exactly.
They know who it was. He's been dealt with swiftly. I'm not sure if I need that level of negativity drifting through the air. You know, it's funny. Yeah. On that note, I've been watching this other Netflix show, The Ranch, Ashton Kutcher's passion project about ranchers,
yep.
Which is like Roseanne, but like funnier, basically, with like people who are like decent people. And the one of the main characters, Danny Masterson, plays his little brother, or actually his big brother. He's written off the show, and I was like, "What's going on here?" And I found out he was written off behind a Me Too like issue as well. You know, before women have come forward saying that he had, you know, raped and sexually assaulted them. And wow. Netflix is not fucking around with that shit. They wrote his ass right off the show. He's been on since the very beginning.
Wow.
Oh.
Like, yeah. Netflix is not fucking with you people.
I mean,
like, get your shit together.
We are no longer in a political climate or even a social climate where we wait to see how much of it is true. I think there's a really short vetting period, and if any part of it is true, you gotta go. You gotta get the fuck out the paint.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that the world we live in is immediate. Everybody wants it now.
Yeah.
It's just now. And
well, you know, it's been, you know, after a pattern of like, you know, it's a wait. Well, it's gonna get better soon, or just, you know, just hold on. We're gonna do it after this, and you know that. You know, that justice deferred becomes justice denied, and people are not having it anymore. They're like, no, you're going to take care of this now or you're losing my money. And people are serious about it.
Yep. They're taking their shit. They're taking their money. They're taking their advertising dollars. They're taking their time. And they're taking their patience with Hollywood's inability to govern itself, even on a base level.
Look at base level. The bare minimum shit. I mean, look at Roman Polanski. Look at Woody Allen. I mean, seriously, you know, a celebrated fucking auteur director is like a noted and open fucking pederast. Like, and we like just ha ha ha. Like, it's not fucking funny, yo.
Nah, shit like, is real. Shit is real.
It's not fucking funny.
It's not funny. It was never funny. I think there was a time when people wanted to believe that it was funny. Because it makes it easier, but it's just not funny. It's not a goddamn game out here.
No, man. Yeah.
And it's weird, specifically to the Chris Harwood situation. This is shit that happened a long time ago. Like, we forced some motherfuckers to get up out of the paint for shit that, you know, like, for being a trash human being before we knew you.
Like, yeah. That's true.
If you was trash before we knew you, still got to go. We taking all your dough back. Like, that's crazy. I don't think it's wrong, but that's how far the reach is now.
Right, right. And then, you know, obviously there's a scale of magnitude here.
True.
I mean, when you got shit like, you know, it's funny. I just got done telling y'all about Everly, and this turned into a real life room. Like, shit. You know, Chris Hardwick's girl, like, lived that life to a degree. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, some shit is, like, bigger than I'm sorry. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yo, I'm going to take a piece of your soul with me for the way that I basically change your life. You know, and, you know, like, no one's supposed to leave their fucking soul with you if they date you for 3 years.
Exactly.
To the point where
you're supposed to leave that joint intact.
Yeah, man. You got to work for years on top of years to try and get even a smidgen of that shit back.
Yeah, no, that's terrible, man. It really is. That's some really like hateful shit too. Like, when you're like, not only is like, okay, you're done with me, but I'm gonna make sure that you suffer. Like, that's just some fucked up shit.
Yeah, I thought that shit was fucked up, man. So, I was disappointed to hear it. And to the larger conversation, you know, I wrote a tweet that basically said that the same people, the Venn diagram of the people who ran Kelly Tran off of the internet are the same, like, and the folks who are defending Chris Hardwick, that's just a circle. There ain't no cross-section. Yeah. It's just a big ass circle.
Yep, you're right.
You know, we can sit up here and have fucking Wookiees and Jabba the Hutts and Sarlaccs and flying in space and midichlorians. But the second we get some black folks and Asian folks in space, now we done gone too far. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
The nerd population with their lack of ability to see inclusion in space is sickening.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It's funny to me, you know, because I remember them saying, you know, when we had the big deal with Finn coming out and Star Wars, and, you know, people were like, I don't relate to that character. And I'm like, man, try being a like genre fan growing up in the 80s like I did. Like,
right.
It wasn't nobody for me to like, quote unquote, relate with. Like,
right.
If I was lucky, I got a Lando once in a while. But for the most part, you know, I'm looking at all of the stories that I love through the lens of white males. And it didn't stop me from enjoying the fucking film. So what's the problem?
Yep. Not everything has to be specifically designed for you to enjoy it.
Absolutely. I made the same argument when we had the issue about girls and its lack of inclusion. And I remember saying at a point, I was like, this isn't about us and it's not for us.
It's not.
Like, I love this show, but I'm watching it voyeuristically. I get to peek into a world that I don't get to see. Like, and I like that. I don't need a token black person in this shit. And that's all it would be.
Yep. Token.
Like, I'm all for
it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for like actual real life inclusion, but just, you know, don't put like a, you know, blackface on a white character, basically, just to like, I don't know, appease a fucking quota. Like, I'm good, yo. If you're not going to write like an authentically black person, leave it alone. It's okay. I ain't got to be in everything.
Yeah. Scott, go ahead. I know you've been trying to jump in here.
I understand. I can empathize. I had a conversation with someone recently, and it's the only time I ever heard this. When Black Panther was out in the theater, somebody had said they'd watched all the Marvel movies except Black Panther. And I looked at them and I go, really? Because Black Panther is probably the best one. And, you know, we talked about this when we were on the show, at least, you know, and it's at least among the best ones.
Yep.
And I was like, damn, absolutely. I mean, Black Panther's really fucking good, man. And he goes, well, you know, I didn't like that they marketed it towards black people. And I didn't understand that, you know, that didn't register. I just was like, what? Like, is this a conversation that I know him well enough that had we continued talking that we may not have continued being friends. not friends. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, is this a conversation we want to have? And he goes, no. And I was like, all right, fair enough.
That's weird to me though, man.
It didn't make any sense to me because I was like, I mean, I've heard a conversation I don't know where I was, but it was again around Black Panther, and these people were talking, and it was this guy and this girl, and he was, you know, saying the same type of thing. And I was just kind of, you know, these were strangers. I was just kind of overhearing the conversation. And I was thinking, like, I mean, this is a character that has a history just like Iron Man does, just like Captain America does, just like, I mean, I just don't understand the reason that you're picking that character out is because he's a black guy. Like, that's just it's a weird thought to me. It's just a foreign thought to me because I don't know. I don't think of it that way. I think of Black Panther. I go like, that motherfucker's badass. Like, I can't wait to go see him on screen. I don't understand why anybody would think anything differently.
Yeah.
And I can empathize. You know, I mean, I grew up at a time. I mean, all the movies I had all had white dudes in it. You know, I grew up watching, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and all those action movies. And, you know, they were catered towards, you know, again, when I'm growing up, I'm thinking, no, they're catered towards everyone. Everybody loves these movies. And that when you guys sit there and say, I mean, you know, that's not how it was. I go like, I mean, yeah, I get it. It's not the same thing. I mean, you know, you can like the Arnold movies too, obviously. That's not what I mean. No,
and we all love Commando. We all love those types
absolutely.
Of films. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
they weren't speaking for us, our point
of
view.
No, they were not. Absolutely not.
You know, and the thing is, at that time, you didn't have to. That shit was never even a consideration.
Yep.
So,
and now that it's just like, now that it is, it's like, I mean, one out of every 20, you got, I mean, we can, you know, it's like, I mean, if you're complaining about this, like, what's the problem here? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, and you guys know this, it's no secret, most of the fucking movies we still get are all, it's all white America. I mean, that's just, that's what it is. It's just, that's a fact.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see something different. That's why it makes no sense to me that, you know, I mean, hell, Marvel, most of their movies outside of Black Panther, they're all, it's just a bunch of white dudes. You know what I mean? I mean, it's, I mean, we're finally
getting. It's not just their movies. It's the comic book characters themselves.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right.
It used to trip me out that people would begrudge the little bit of shit that is focused or geared or even positioned towards Black folks, or, you know, or POC in general. And I heard this really good quote. Right. I heard this really good quote, and I'm going to give the credit to Ta-Nehisi Coates. It might not be him, but it sounds like some smart shit he would say. but it was like along the lines of, you know, the removal of privilege from the privileged feels like oppression.
Yep.
And I was like, yeah, I get that. I mean, I'm not saying it's right or logical, but I do get it. You know, I mean, if you're sitting underneath a heat lamp your whole life, and somebody moves that spotlight, you're going to get cold, you know?
You're not used to being
cold. Well, I mean, that's why we are where we are politically. I mean, that's exactly why we are where we are politically. So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that, I'm not justifying it. My point is, it's just, that's where we are as, I mean,
you're absolutely
we're still there. It's just, it sucks. It's just, I mean, it's amazing to me because, you know, whenever I think that, you know, generationally, at least in the movies, we can, you know, we can all go into the movies and enjoy it. But when, you know, I remember when Force Awakens came out, there were, you know, people complaining about John Boyega having a major role in playing a stormtrooper as if, you know, an entire galaxy filled with people, there's not, you're not allowed to have one black stormtrooper. Like what? Like, doesn't even make sense. I mean, there's thousands of these dudes and, yeah, you can't.
Okay, there's a nerd argument for that the stormtroopers are cloned from a single person.
Yeah, well,
ran out of clones. But this is much later.
No, I get the story behind it. I get it. I'm just saying, there was at least a semblance. There was a fig leaf of a logical argument.
Maybe. It seems to stand that eventually they're not going to keep cloning the same motherfucker. So,
and that's essentially what the storyline runs into. Like the Empire decides it's actually cheaper to just recruit actual human beings and to continue to clone people because it's people make each other for free. We don't have to pay for it. So yeah,
but it's I don't know. I hear that, and I, you know, again, I grew up not really thinking about it, but looking back on it, I, you know, you're right. I mean, hell, Star Wars, you guys had Lando. He was cool, but yeah, I mean, but that's
Lando ain't got no backstory.
And you got Darth Vader up until they took his mask off.
Yep.
Can I tell you what a huge disappointment that was to me? Because, you know, I knew that I'm like, that's a brother. I was waiting for them to take that mask off. And you see that sickly white dude? I was like, man, it was like someone told me Santa Claus wasn't real. I was so upset. I was so upset. And you know what? Honestly, I watched that movie with my big sister, and I'm realizing now that she set my little punk ass up because she was sitting there watching me the whole movie.
Yep, like, she knew. It was like, oh, he's going to be so disappointed.
I was hot, son. I was so mad. You couldn't tell me shit. I knew that Darth Vader was black. You couldn't tell me no different.
There's a funny. Have you guys seen? You guys have seen Chasing Amy. You've seen the scene in there where, whatever that character's name is going on about that exact thing, and he's just his quote is like, how disappointed it was when Darth Vader, the blackest brother in the whole universe, and you take his helmet off, and he's an old crusty white man.
I do remember that line.
Oh man, that's just that. Again, when you think about it like that, it's just like, damn, that's, I mean, yeah, that sucks.
That's okay. I still had a Panthro.
Oh, there you go.
Now that is some good shit. yeah, man. That was a good-ass conversation. I'm glad we got there.
Yeah. Tangent like a motherfucker, man. Whoa, how we get here?
Yeah. I'm sorry I brought us here. That's my fault.
Yeah, wait,
but you know what? It was a good conversation to have. I'm glad we had it, and it tied in nicely to how we started off the show. So that worked out well. Yeah. I ain't mad.
Yeah,
I thought it was very necessary. The last piece is, Tone, where can the people find you online?
Oh, of course, you can find me on Twitter, Fake William Cat. That's pretty much it. Get at me and get out the room. Oh, of course, we got the fan page, the fan Facebook page, Get Out the Room fan page. I do a lot of stuff there, and just get at us any kind of way you want. You know, give us a rating on iTunes, and not only that, but like interact with us, guys. We're pretty accessible, and we've covered stuff on the show based upon someone stepping to us with a question like, hey, what do you think about this? In fact, I was thinking about this the other day when we had probably one of the worst horror movies I've ever seen. I'm sorry for whoever the fan that suggested it. Do you guys remember that movie we watched where these people are dying, but they're constantly being sexually assaulted by this maniac with like a 15-inch penis?
Whoa. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do
remember that?
Yeah.
That was a fan.
I think I watched like 5 minutes of it and turned it off.
That wasn't just a fan. That was from Joy.
Oh, Joy. Are you kidding me? Was that Joy?
Yeah, it's Joy.
Oh, hell my God. Sir. Well, and true to point, Joy is like part of the fam now. Like, we regularly discuss topics and based on like Joy asked the question. So. That's actually a better example than I even realized.
Yep.
So like, if you guys got questions, if you guys got an idea, or you like, hey, I want to think about this, just get at us.
Yeah, man. Scott.
Phenompirus Twitter. If you spot me on Twitter, then that's like finding gold at the end of a rainbow.
Yeah, Scott will pay for your first shirt.
hey, there you go. That's actually, that'd be a good contest there.
Yeah, man.
It's like, where's Waldo? I like that. Find Scott, get a free t-shirt.
Nice. And I like that.
That's pretty good. So, and you can find me at DAE021 at Get Out the Room. All the regular places, the Facebook fan page. I'm also there. You may see some of the other contributors as Carl, Ryan, folks pop up from time to time, but it's mainly us. Again, you can find Get Out the Room on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Podomatic, Listenopoly, the Wicked Radio Network, and that's about it, man. And for Tony, for Scott, man, appreciate you. And we gonna get up out of here.
Peace.
Peace, y'all.